Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
All right, here we go. Welcome in. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, a Thursday night edition. We've got you for a full 2 hours. We will take you until 8 o'clock tonight. At 8 o'clock, Jen Cease is going to be in with City Spotlight. So lots of sports talk here in the evening, starting with the Redbird Rush Hour last hour, then Sports Open Line the next 2 hours, and then City Spotlight coming up at 8 o'clock. As always, if you want to chime in, you can do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can also tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air, and we are with you throughout the next 2 hours. I have a number of guests that will be with us tonight. Levi Weaver, who is part of the MLB team at The Athletic, he is scheduled to join us in about 10 minutes or so at about 6:20. We'll talk some Blues hockey with Luke Korak. He's going to be with us at 6:35 as the young guys are getting on the ice and training camp is going to be starting before you know it. We're going to talk with Missouri State Athletic Director Patrick Ransdell. That's going to be at 7:20 tonight as they are in their first year in Conference USA playing FBS football, and so far it's going well. We had their football coach on earlier in the week. Now we're going to kind of talk more from a big picture standpoint of what's going on down in Springfield with that athletic department as Patrick Ransdell is going to be with us. Again, that's at 7:20, and then 7:35, our good friend Kevin Ryans from Channel 2 and Channel 11, he'll join us as well. So we got a few people on the program tonight. Cardinals lose late last night. Man, that was a weird game. It was a weird game. And it was a game where there's some really cool moments, but also a game where you were really frustrated as things went down. I'll tell you something. Last night, I'm listening to Oliver Marmol's post-game media conference. And honestly, I was kind of annoyed they lost that game. You play 13 innings, you have opportunities. The 2-for-22 with runners in scoring position from last night, that frustrated the living you know what out of me. Like, there were so many opportunities to come up with a hit. There were things that happened in the game that were annoying. Kevin and I talked about during the Redbird Rush Hour the decision to bunt Fermin. I didn't like that. Avon Herrera's base running in that one inning was just terrible. Like, there were so many things about that game that were frustrating. And Oliver Marmol starts his post-game media session, and I am listening to it just as you listen to it. If you happen to be listening on the air last night when I played it, I don't hear it before I play it. That's the first time. And Ollie opens up with something along the lines of, "Yes, I'm frustrated, but I am also like excited or also happy or pleased, whatever, with some of the things that happened during the game." And my microphone was off, but I audibly gasped in that moment. I was like, it was this, come on. Are you kidding me? What are you talking about? You had 9 million chances to win that freaking game. How can you see the good stuff? So that was my feeling in that moment. And that was during the network post-game show. We weren't yet to the extra inning show, so the network post-game show isn't really the time where I do opinions. It's more about just getting the information out there. And we, you know, once we get done with that and we go to extra innings, that's where opinions can come out. So that was my immediate visceral reaction. I was really annoyed that the Cardinals lost that game, and then I was annoyed that Ollie wanted to talk about the good stuff that happened. So that's where I was at. And then a little bit of time goes by, and I'm sitting and I'm thinking about the game, and I'm thinking about, like, as I get ready to do the extra inning show, the call in, the opinion show after Cardinals games, I kind of take inventory in my mind before that first segment of the things that I want to talk about. And I wasn't ignoring the 2-for-22. I wasn't ignoring Yvonne Herrera's terrible base running. I wasn't ignoring any of that. I wasn't even downplaying any of it. But you know what I came away with after a little bit of time? It was a really good development to see Riley O'Brien figure out a way to get out of a couple bases loaded situations in extra innings. If we're worried about what this team is going to look like moving forward, if we're worried about who can be a part of this team moving forward, well, I get a lot more out of seeing what I saw last night from Riley O'Brien than, like, I have no long-term worries about Yvonne Herrera's base running. He had a terrible base running inning. He admitted it after the game. He said, "I blanked up." And he said he knew he made the mistake on the Burleson thing when he didn't tag, and then he got in his head and he was trying to do too much and he didn't realize, you know, the time and temperature of the game, and then he ends up getting doubled off. That may never happen to Yvonne Herrera again for the rest of his career. So I can be annoyed in the moment at Herrera and him playing a part in losing that game, but that doesn't have a long-term implication. The 2-for-22 thing, that's... We've seen the team struggle with runners in scoring position over the last couple years, and it's happening again right now. So I'm not going to downplay that one, but I would still argue that the impact of seeing what we saw last night from Riley O'Brien and his, you know, the way he got out of that, the work that Matt Svaundsen did, the work that JoJo Romero did, the work that Michael McGreevy did. McGreevy's day got completely lost in everything because they played 13 stinking innings. You know, offensively, for Thomas Sejacy to come up with a big hit late and drive in a run, he had a 4-for-5 night. That was a great night for Thomas Sejacy. Great night. Team made some nice defensive plays. So I actually, as frustrated as I was in the moment with what Ollie had to say, as time started to pass, at least for me, my mind actually started going to some of the good things that happened in that game as well. And I don't know if it was just because it was 12:30 in the morning and I was delirious, or if that's really, you know, where I was at. But I started to understand that a little bit more. But that was a frustrating loss. The being, you know, happy or content or whatever it might be with some of the good things that that happened does not take away from how frustrating of a loss that was last night. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me as well, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. Again, we've got a bunch of guests who are going to be on the program tonight, including Levi Weaver. He's part of the team over at The Athletic, writing the wind-up MLB newsletter every single day. We'll talk with him coming up in just a moment. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. A Cardinals off night, so we've got the full show for you this evening. Cardinals will get back at tomorrow, trying to get things back going again. They got into 500, then they get swept by the Mariners, and now they're going to take on a Brewers team beginning tomorrow who just got swept themselves by the Texas Rangers team that's playing some really, really good baseball right now. Let's bring in Levi Weaver. He's part of the MLB team at The Athletic, writes the wind-up MLB newsletter, and he joins us right now on the guest line. Levi, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, of course. I'm doing good. How are you guys?
I'm doing pretty good. So there's a few races right now that are still kind of interesting. The Cardinals were involved with that, playing Seattle, because that AL wild card and AL West are kind of up in the air right now with a few different teams, and teams the Mariners are playing good baseball, Rangers are playing good baseball. What in the final, you know, 2.5-3 weeks of the season, what races are you really watching and are you intrigued by right now?
Man, there's a lot of really good ones. I mean, the AL West, as you brought up, is a very good one. Houston lost again today, so they're only a half game up on Seattle. They're two games up on Texas. That is a three-way race there, which is a whole lot of fun. Seattle and Texas also battling it out for that third AL wild card spot. The AL East is interesting to me. You've got the Yankees and Red Sox both 3.5 games behind Toronto. Toronto was really, really hot. They're still... You know, I mean, none of those three teams have a losing record in their last 10 games, but, you know, they're not, you know, setting the world ablaze either. I think the NL West is interesting for a different reason. It's kind of that nobody's really playing very well. The Dodgers and the Padres seem to be just trading off as many losses as possible. Of course, the Dodgers did some winning against the Rockies, but that one is looks like it might come down to the wire as well. And then in the NL, the wild card has also gotten interesting because the Reds have been playing well, so now they're only a couple games back. San Francisco got hot. They're only a couple games back. The Mets are on a five-game losing streak, so now they're in peril of losing their playoff spot. So around the league, I mean, it's just, you know, it's almost pick a series and there's going to be some playoff implications right now.
Let's talk about the New York teams for a second. It's not often that they both give up 11 runs on the same night. That's what happened yesterday. The Yankees had been playing some pretty solid baseball. They'd won a bunch of games, and then all of a sudden they meet, admittedly, a good Detroit team. And in that first game against Detroit, I know they gave up a ton of runs in one inning, but it feels like any time you think that the Yankees are turning into that team we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season, they show reasons that maybe they're not.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Blue Jays announcer, Buck Martinez, a couple of nights ago decided it was time, and he was going to give the Yankees what for, and he just said, they're not a good team. They hit the ball really well, but they can't pitch, they can't field, they don't run, they don't play good fundamentals. They're just not a good team. All they can do is hit the ball. And that's maybe a little harsh, but also he's not entirely wrong. I mean, they are a team of mashers. They score a lot of runs, and when they don't do that, then everything else kind of lets them down. You know, Anthony Volpe might not even be playing shortstop every game from here on out because he's been so bad. Jose Caballero's getting some playing time there. Meanwhile, the Mets have just been the weirdest team in baseball for a long time. It's just kind of their calling card. If the Mets win their next 10 games in a row, I'm not going to be that surprised. And if the Mets lose their next 10 games in a row, I'm not going to be that surprised. They just can't seem to be very normal. And there's a possibility that if they do make the playoffs, their top three starting pitchers are going to be guys who have, you know, a combined right now under 20 starts in the big leagues. Mm. With the three the three prospects they've called up. And they're very good prospects, but, man, that's surely not what they envisioned when they broke camp this spring.
It's weird. Like, I'm a David Stearns guy. I think so highly of him as an executive. And when he got to New York, I just thought the Mets were going to turn into basically Dodgers East and be winning at a high level all the time. And they haven't done it this year. And I don't totally know why. What do you think has led to them being as inconsistent as they've been this year?
I really don't know, and that's the worst answer. Like, you never want to give that answer as a special guest on the radio, but that's
all right.
You know, I will say that, like, I haven't watched, you know, 100 Mets games this year, but just, you know, keeping up with the league and reading about them, there's not one thing I can point to and just be like, well, it's definitely this. If they would solve this one problem, then they'd be fine. It's sometimes it's the offense, sometimes it's the pitching. Sometimes it's injuries, which is something that's bitten just about every contender right now. But, you know, you bring up being Dodgers East. Maybe they are, because the Dodgers have been kind of a letdown this month, too. So maybe there just is no magic bullet. You kind of expect you get sort of Friedman with Dodgers money, and, you know, that did work last year. You get Stearns with the Mets money, and you would expect it to work out a little better than it has.
You're based in the Dallas area, and we mentioned the Texas Rangers. They're arguably the hottest team in baseball. If they're not, they're one of the hottest teams in baseball. I don't know if they were left for dead, but they were the possibilities of them being a playoff team were not great. They've gone on this run. They're right there now in the race for the wild card and for the AL West. What's led to them going on? It's kind of an extended run here for them. Like it to me, and you would know better than I would, but to me, from the outside looking in, it seems like what they're doing right now is real.
Yeah, so here's a short list of players that are on the injured list for the Rangers right now. Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, Nathan Eovaldi, Tyler Mahle, Adolis Garcia. It's just, like, probably five of the biggest names on the team are on the injured list right now. And the biggest gaffe that I have made in writing in the windup is I devoted an entire section when Corey Seager got hurt, because they all got hurt around the same time, going, that's it. The Rangers are done. They're all hurt. Like, cash it in, they're it's over. And they have had just an influx of guys with not a lot of major league experience. It's guys like, you know, raise your hand if you recognize any of these names: Cody Freeman, Michael Hellman, Dustin Harris, Alejandro Osuna. Like, these are guys that are either rookies, or in fact they are all technically rookies. Michael Hellman's 29 years old and has kind of bounced around a little bit. And they just swept the Brewers. I mean, Michael Hellman, he robbed a two-run home run in the fifth inning the other night, and then in the very next half inning, hit a two-run home run. It was his fifth career home run, and two of them came against the Brewers. One was a grand slam to win the first game, and the other was the difference in the second game. So it's really fun to watch, because it's just guys who are excited to be there. Is it real? I don't know. Can you bank on those types of players to really take you deep into a postseason? Baseball's a weird sport. Sure, maybe it would be one of the more improbable playoff runs I've seen. Is it real is a really good question. I kind of think no, but it's fun to watch right now.
Yeah, the Hellman thing is especially funny for people in St. Louis, because he was in spring with the Cardinals, didn't look good at all, went to AAA, hit 185 at Memphis. He ended up somewhere else before he went to the Rangers, and then all of the
Pirates, yeah.
Yeah, so we all saw him. We had a front row seat to Hellman not looking like a Major League Baseball player in Jupiter, Florida, and now all of a sudden he's seemingly the best baseball player in the world.
Yeah, and I got a chance to talk to him the other day, and he's just such a, like, he almost seems as perplexed by it as everybody else. Like, just sort of this, aw shucks, I don't know, I'm just happy to be here mentality. And I love stories like that. I love the guy who was just not very good, who goes on a run. Now, most of the time, those guys don't end up being, like, long-term stars. You've got, you know, I guess maybe Jose Bautista is a good example of somebody who did that in the past. I'm not saying guys never officially turn a corner and make it for the rest of their careers, but it kind of does feel like a flash in the pan. We'll see how it goes.
Super good dude. You got to be happy for him, for sure. We're joined right now by Levi Weaver, writes for The Athletic, covering Major League Baseball. I know that the Cardinals have not given you a reason to pay extreme attention to them this year, being basically a 500 club for most of the season, especially after their good run in May. But from an outsider's point of view looking in, what do you see from this season this year as they get ready for the first year of Heim Bloom's president of baseball operations role next year?
Yeah, I think it's worth investing a little excitement into the Cardinals. I expected them to be very bad this year. I mean, the messaging in the offseason was not in these terms, but in the, you know, more diplomatic terms that front offices use. Yeah, it's going to be bad this year. I mean, they traded off veterans. They tried to trade Nolan Arenado, couldn't do it. We're going to let the young guys play and see what we've got. And everybody kind of just went, okay, well, let's just pencil them in for last place, because we forgot about the Pittsburgh Pirates existing. And they came out and made it interesting for a while. And, you know, I don't think that, what are they, like 4.5 games back? I guess they're not technically eliminated yet this year, but it's probably not going to happen. But I think there's cause to be excited. Let's see how Mason Wynn recovers from this meniscus tear. I think it's really interesting that he's continuing to play, because apparently he can't make it worse. But they've got some good pieces. It's just a matter of, like, I mean, as is the case with any rebuild, like, how do those guys develop in years 2 and 3? And then what sort of investments does the front office make when it looks like they've got a little traction?
He is Levi Weaver. You read him at The Athletic. He does the baseball newsletter every day. For folks who want to get that newsletter, what's the best way to go about doing that?
You know, there is a specific link, but I never can remember it, and it's maybe a little complicated. If you just Google my name, Levi Weaver, and the Windup, you could actually, an easier name to remember will be Ken Rosenthal. He writes it with me. Yeah. Ken Rosenthal, the Windup. It'll be the first search result that you get. Don't click on the AI result. Click on the real results. And it's a free newsletter. You don't even have to be subscribed to The Athletic to get our newsletter. It's 5 days a week.
Awesome. Very good. Levi, we appreciate the time. Have a good final few weeks of the baseball season. Hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Right on. Take care.
Awesome. Very good. That's Levi Weaver joining us from The Athletic and the daily baseball newsletter that they do. The Windup is what it's called. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll switch gears. We'll talk some Blues hockey. Luke Korak is going to be with us. That's up next. Don't go anywhere. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Well, believe it or not, we're coming up on hockey season. It is not going to be that long. High expectations for the St. Louis Blues after what happened last year, and actually some Blues players already getting on to the ice. Training camp's officially going to open up here pretty soon, but some prospects are getting on the ice, and we're very happy to welcome on, we'll say, for the first time this year, and he'll join us hopefully a few times as the year goes along. He's our good friend Luke Korak. You read him at NHL.com. He's also the Blues side editor with the Hockey News. Follow him on Twitter at LKorak10. Lou, thanks for taking the time. Hopefully you've had a wonderful last few months, and I'm glad you're able to actually be back covering things that are happening on the ice once again.
Yeah, it was a little different walking into Centene today, just to, you know, hear pucks and sticks and whatnot. It's been a moment, but glad to get back at it. And I'm sure you're tired of hearing the same rhetoric about Cardinal baseball here and there. So we'll mix in a little bit of hockey here for you anytime, Matt.
Yeah, no, that's great, and I'm really excited about what the Blues are going to do this year. Explain for our listeners, because training camp's not getting underway, but prospect camp is. What does that look like? Who's there? What are they actually going to do before training camp officially gets started?
Well, the prospects were on the ice this morning, and they'll be out there again tomorrow before they depart for Minnesota and take on the Wild Friday night, and then Chicago on Saturday night, just a quick two games in and out of there. Kind of the same deal that they had last year. I think it's a pretty neat thing that the three teams do. It's pretty simple. It's pretty quick. It's an easy trip for everybody. It was here last year, and it just rotates every year. It was actually supposed to be in Chicago this year, but they're doing, my understanding is they're doing some repairs, I believe, or I don't know if it has anything to do with any kind of expansion or anything, but apparently the building in Chicago, their practice facility, wasn't available, so it's back in Minnesota. Again, just the prospects in there. Carbonneau, Dvorsky is here. A lot of the first-round picks, Juracek, Stenberg is playing, Theo Lindstein's playing, so a lot of good prospects are going to be part of it for the Blues, and it's actually a pretty neat thing to see because the top line consists of all three first-round picks, and that top D pairing that you saw are also first-round picks. So we'll be for hockey fans that want to get their craving. The games are going to be on the YouTube channel, I believe. The Blues are going to be televising them, and you'll get to see a lot of the future in action this weekend before things get underway in main camp a week from today.
Yeah, it's almost you kind of salivate what's going to be coming, and most of those guys probably aren't that far away from being with the Blues.
No, and it's funny because we talked to Justin Carbonneau today and just the route that he took instead of going to Boston College. I mean, he had the opportunity to make that choice, and the Blues were fully supportive of whatever he decided to do, whether it was go the college route or decide to go back to juniors. And if he would have gone to college, Matt, he would not have been a part of this. He would not have been allowed to be a part of this. I think that a lot of that played into it. He talked about it today, and I wanted to ask him just, you know, what his reasonings, what was the tipping point for him? And I think this kid firmly believes that he's going to come in and give it his all and to make the team out of training camp. And the one thing he says is he's got nothing to lose. And I think that's a great attitude to take because, you know what, I think he's comfortable with whatever happens, whether – he surprises and woos and wows management and the coaching staff here and wins a job. He's going to have to take a job from somebody. And that's going to be the biggest challenge and the most difficult thing that's going to have to happen here. And they could keep him here for 9 games before they decide whether they want to send him back to juniors or whether they think that he can make the cut and make the team. So there's plenty of options here, and I think he's comfortable if the Blues decide that he's not quite ready to make the NHL. He's quite comfortable going back to his junior team in the QMJHL and making a run there because he feels like they have a really good team that could win that league there and compete for a Memorial Cup. So he's got a lot of motivation, and same thing with Dalibor Dvorsky, who we got to talk to today as well. This seems like a really motivated kid to come in to try to win a spot out of training camp this year.
Is it an NCAA thing on why they would not be allowed to participate if they're playing college hockey?
It is. Without looking at it here, and I apologize for that, there have been some ramifications to that stuff, but yes, and that's why I think he wanted to have multiple options here, and you know, it wouldn't have been a bad thing for him. I mean, his options were to go back to junior or go to Boston College, and we know Boston College is a pretty darn good hockey program. They've been a top tier team for a long, long time. So he would have been able to go there and really excel and kind of take the route that Jimmy Snuggerud did. And I think we're already seeing ramifications of just by going the collegiate route, how things have turned out for Jimmy Snuggerud. The Blues already know they've got themselves an NHL caliber player. So if he would have chosen that route, they would have been just as supportive and comfortable in that decision as well. But I just think that this kid wants the opportunity. He feels like he owes it to the program that has brought him along, that he said today, for 3 years now. And he firmly, but I don't think if they were going to have a team that wasn't going to be able to compete for a championship this year, I think that it might have swayed him to go the other way. But I think he firmly believes that they have a good enough team to compete for a championship just in case he's not able to win a job out of training camp this year. So he had a couple of options there, and he felt like that was the right one to take.
I know this isn't what we brought you on to talk about, but just real quickly, if you're NCAA hockey and you are basically competing against junior programs for top-level players, wouldn't it make sense to put some type of rule in where college hockey players can go participate in prospect camps with teams that drafted them? If that's going to keep a player out of college hockey, you're really, you know, messing yourself up and not allowing yourself to get your best players.
I agree, and that's why I think you saw in that situation with the Blues, they were wanting Snuggerud to come out the year before last. They were wanting him to come out then. He himself just didn't feel like he was ready. And I think, I don't want to say they begrudgingly agreed with his decision. I think they wanted to show their support, and they understood why he wanted to stay back and continue to hone in on his craft and get better. And you have to applaud and appreciate the player for feeling like, hey, I'm not ready to come here now to be good enough to play and be a part of this and be a part of the solution for this organization. But in that regard, they didn't have the opportunity to do it themselves. And I think that's what the team really appreciates about this situation with Carboneau, is the fact that now they can get him here now, they can watch him now, they can work with him. Now they'll get him into training camp as well. And if all goes well, great. If it doesn't, there's always the option of going back to junior. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that's something that I think needs to at least be amended, because otherwise you're going to have more of these guys now. And you also have it's funny, because Tomas Mrsic, who's one of the Blues draft picks from last year, he's going to Colorado College this year. He actually left junior hockey to go play in the NCAA. So things are starting to get amended, but I think if you're going to make this completely right, I think that these guys should be allowed to be with their NHL teams, because after all, this is their dream and this is what they're striving for to begin with.
So if there's three options for Carboneau, where he could either just be sent back to junior hockey right away, where he could play a few games with the team and then get sent back, or he could actually make the team. Of those three possibilities, which one do you think is the most likely?
I think it's going to be awfully difficult for him to win a job. He is going to have to come in and just absolutely shine. And I think it starts with these two games. He's got to go up to these next two games and already leave an impression with whoever is going to go up and watch the Blues in this competition next two games. And he's really going to have to go in and like I said, win a job, take a job from somebody. I honestly think he's going to go back and play in junior this year. The kid's big enough and he's strong enough right now. I really like his physical stature. But as a lot of the executives will always say, you can always get bigger and stronger, because, you know, you're talking about an 18-year-old now that's going to try to win a job and try to compete against grown men who are doing this for a living. It's quite a big difference, and at times it can quite be the cultural shock for some of these guys. So I think he's going to give it his best shot, but it's going to be awfully tough for him to do it. I honestly think unless he just comes in and stands on his head and has this incredible training camp, I think you're going to see him in junior hockey this year. I wouldn't leave out the option of them keeping him around for the nine games. They did this with Jake Neighbors here recently, and look what it's done for him. They did it with Alex Pietrangelo twice. And I can remember when Alex Pietrangelo, at least the second time when they decided to send him back to juniors, he was visibly upset. And I think that was a great thing. And we've saw what kind of a player he's turned out to be. So I wouldn't rule that out. But I honestly believe that it's going to be awfully tough for him to win a job. And he's probably going to wind up playing in juniors this year.
Isn't it incredible how quick this comes? Because the prospect camp's going on right now. We're 9 days away from their first preseason game. Training camp, actual training camp, will get underway in just a few days. And I mean, before you know it, the regular season is here. It's amazing how quickly this all comes up on us.
Matt, I always tell everybody, that's what I love about hockey, is the fact that these guys, basically, they have to come in shape. I mean, you saw out there today, and I got a chance to watch them for a little bit before I went to watch the prospects. The main guys are already out there. They're having their captain skates. The captains usually organize this stuff where they're getting together. And you don't use this. This is basically their training camp. Basically started a couple of weeks ago, and it's basically you're doing it on your own, because you don't use training camp in the NHL to come in and try to get in shape. You better have yourself in shape by the time you get here, because once they get going, yeah, it's a couple of practices and it's off and running. Unlike, you know, where you're talking about baseball, where you have a month of spring training, or the NFL, where you're in training camp for a month. Not in this game. I mean, you have to come in ready to go, and I think that's what's great about this. And moving on, you're gonna when you wind up seeing this turn into an 84-game schedule, you're probably going to see preseason games reduced down. So there's going to be even less preseason games and just more time for these guys to have to utilize for themselves to be ready to go once camp officially gets going.
Luke Korak, he's awesome. We love talking hockey with him. You can read him at NHL.com, also at the Hockey News covering the Blues. Follow him on Twitter at LKorak10. Lou, thanks so much. I know you know that we'll be ringing your phone fairly often here over the course of the year, and we always appreciate you being so willing to come on.
No problem. Anytime, Matt. Take care.
Awesome. Very good. That's Luke Korak talking. That feels good. That feels good to talk a little Blues hockey. Not that we're done talking about the Cardinals. We're not. But like this summer, I don't think it's been a bad year for the Cardinals, but we're kind of at a point now where it's just like what's left to be accomplished. And we've talked about this a lot. Like there are still some things, staying in mathematical contention as long as possible. There is some value in that, seeing them fight, do all of that. But it has not been the year that we would have liked it to be, especially after they went on that run in May and raised expectations. It's been a terrible season for City SC, just terrible. We finally, there's some positivity, some good things to talk about when we're talking about the Blues. Obviously, a lot of good things to talk about area-wise with college football with Mizzou in Illinois, and we'll spend a lot of time on that as well. Right now, what we'll do is we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. Appreciate you being with us tonight. It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are starting to wrap up hour number one of the program, and hour number two, we've got a whole lot coming up. We'll have a few guests that are going to join us. We are going to be joined at 7:20 by Missouri State Athletics Director Patrick Ransdell. What an exciting time for Missouri State. And I realize that it was a controversial decision to leave the Missouri Valley Conference and a lot of people in St. Louis because of the Valley being here and us, the shared love that most sports fans in St. Louis have for the Missouri Valley Conference. When they leave that league, there's hurt feelings. At the same time, it's an opportunity for them to play at a higher level, and so far so good for them. So it is a changing time right now at Missouri State. And we'll talk with Patrick Ransdell, their athletic director, who came in after that decision was made. So that's going to be one of the things I asked him about was how he felt about that decision, knowing that the guy who made that decision basically wasn't going to be there to implement that decision. So that's going to be at 7:20. And then Kevin Ryans is going to join us at 7:35. Also want to mention real quickly, congratulations going out to former Blues TV broadcaster John Kelly, as he has a new job, and we didn't know whether or not he would be calling hockey this year. It felt like when the decision was made that the Blues were going to go to just one broadcast where they were going to simulcast their TV broadcast on radio, that maybe that happened at a point where it was going to be tough for John, who's obviously very good at what he does, that it was going to be tough for him to find a new spot. Well, he has found a new spot. And he's going to be calling games for the Los Angeles Kings. So congratulations to him for that. That's good. We're happy that he is definitely continuing to broadcast hockey. That's going to do it for hour number one. More coming up in just a moment here on KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Strike Zone, presented by Graybar. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. On the voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
We are into hour number two of a Graybar Sports Open Line. It is a Strike Zone hour, taking you until 8 o'clock tonight. And then once we wrap up, we are going to hand things off to our good friend Jen Cease, as she's got City Spotlight tonight from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. We'll try to have her on in our final segment if we're able to get her in here. But her job tonight is to explain how in the world City can play a man up almost an entire game or three quarters of a game, have the second most shots in the history of the league, and still play to a 1-1 tie. That is the question of this pad. Like that, I'm no soccer guru. I'm no soccer expert. I know enough to know, man, that was not good. So we'll have Jen, hopefully. I'll ask her that. That's going to be, I'm going to like steal the thunder from her entire show, because that's going to be the question that I ask her when she walks in here. Or she's listening right now and she doesn't want to actually answer that question because she's going to save it for her show and she's not going to come in, and that's okay too. I'm kidding about that. She'll always come in. She's good. Anyways, a little bit Cardinals here, and then we've got a few more guests to get to coming up. I'm excited for our next guest. We're going to talk with the athletic director at Missouri State. I love talking with athletic directors. They're some of my favorite people to be able to discuss things with. I'm enthralled by the business of athletics, and I don't think it is any more compelling than what we're seeing in the world of college athletics right now, with just the changing nature of college athletics. And then when you have a university that is moving from the FCS level to the FBS level, while all the other stuff is going on at the same time, I just think it's really, really interesting. So that's going to be coming up here in a little bit more than 10 minutes here on KMOX. Kevin and I on the Redbird Rush Hour, we talked a lot about what the Cardinals are doing right now from an offensive standpoint, more like what they're not doing right now from an offensive standpoint. Because, and I think I saw Bernie had this over at STL Sports Central, just the conversation about if the Cardinals would have done just a little bit more, or done things just a little bit differently, where would they be right now? And it's a legitimate question, because like people are talking about this team like they are some terrible bottom of everything team, and they're not. They're three games under 500, so they're in the neighborhood of 500. That's not terrible. It's not good, but it's not terrible. They're what, 4.5 games out of a playoff spot. They're probably not going to be a playoff team this year, but they're not buried in the standings. And you start to play some things out in your head. 4.5 games out of a playoff spot. Well, what if they would have cut the cord on Eric Fetty a little bit sooner? What would it look like then if they would have gone to Michael McGreevy? Because they've won, what, 9 of McGreevy's 14 starts, I think it was. And yesterday he pitched a whale of a ball game. First time that they've lost a back-to-back of his starts. So, yeah, I'm not saying completely replace Fetty for McGreevy from day number one. That's not logical. So, and Fetty had an okay start to the season. Like, and you would have let it play out a little while he struggled. But at what point in time, because we were talking about it on this show and other shows, where it just became pretty clear that Fetty really wasn't giving you an opportunity to win ball games. If they would have cut the cord on Fetty sooner than they did, well, how many more wins do they have? And I guess it depends on when they would have cut that cord and everything that would have played out there. But I think it's safe to say they could have 2 or 3 more wins, depending on when they would have done that. This team has 3 more wins. They are a game and a half out of a playoff spot right now. Do you feel differently about the Cardinals if they're a game out of half a playoff spot? I think so. Would have it looked different if the offseason would have turned out a different way? What if they would have gotten Nolan Arenado moved? Because Arenado was not very good offensively this year for the Cardinals, hasn't been. He had an okay start to the season. He fell back quickly. Now Nolan Gorman has had a pretty solid season based off a number of metrics. If you're only judging him on batting average, then you're yelling at your radio right now telling me that I don't know what I'm talking about because he doesn't have a good batting average. But that's not the way he produces. That's not his production by all other metrics. Gorman's had a nice season. If you would have had Gorman over at third, is there another win or two in there? Because he got more time? Because there was a long stretch this year where Gorman just wasn't playing. Now, I try to be fair when I always present these things. And Gorman was not very good up until about June 1st. So maybe Arenado outperformed him. Like if you could hop back in the DeLorean and, you know, run two alternate universes together and look at the alternate universe of Gorman being the everyday third baseman from day one based off and then compare that to what Arenado actually did. Is there a scenario where Arenado outplays Gorman for the first couple months of the season? Yeah, absolutely. Because Gorman was still working on some things. So it's not a really easy thing to say. You can't like put Gorman's overall numbers for this year and then try to just insert them into all the games that Arenado has played and say, well, if it would have been Gorman over Arenado, what would that look like? It just doesn't work that way because there was a process to Gorman getting to where that swing has looked a lot better. So I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think there's definitely some alternate, you know, realities, some alternate scenarios that you can play out and say, hey, if this would have gone this way, if this would have gone that way, things would have looked a little bit different. And maybe this team is right there. And maybe if this team just wouldn't have had all the stuff about the runway season. If they would have expressed a desire to play as many young players as possible, but at the same time would have tried to do more to add to the roster in the offseason. Now, I've never been one to call. Let me be clear. I'm not retroactively saying they should have done that either. I understood what they were trying to accomplish this year. I would argue how much they actually were able to accomplish that this year, but I understood what they were doing. But if they would have taken a different path, if they would have had the approach that they had more, say, in 2024 when they are bringing in major league guys for the roster, does it look different this year? And I think it possibly does. That's the way things go sometimes, and you just have to find a way to deal with it and move forward. Let's build the future with Graybar. Graybar is a great place to work. It's headquartered in St. Louis. Quick update on where J.J. Weatherholt is at, because he had a non-baseball issue that was keeping him off the field where he didn't play for about a week. He got back into the lineup yesterday and went 0-for-4 in a game against Jacksonville. He had one walk and he scored a run. So overall, for Weatherholt, his AAA numbers, he is hitting .314 over 39 games and has an OPS just a tick below 1,000 at .997. And I would say that barring something kind of crazy happening, we are not going to see him with the Cardinals before this season comes to an end. We'll take a break, and when we return, excited for this conversation. We're going to talk some Missouri State athletics, not just what's going on with the football program, which is pretty cool, but from an athletic department standpoint overall. The athletics director at Missouri State, Patrick Ransdell, he is set to join us coming up in just a moment or so. Don't go anywhere. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Our Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you for another 40 or so minutes here on KMOX. It's a It's an exciting time right now, I think, for Missouri State Athletics. Right now, the world of athletics, everything is changing, and Missouri State certainly changed some things as they moved from the FCS level to the FBS level in football and joined Conference USA. And right there, along for the ride, a guy who just marked his one-year mark since taking the job. He is their athletics director, Patrick Ransdell, and he joins us right now on KMOX. Patrick, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, just mentioned you just passed the one-year mark. I got to think this year has been quite the whirlwind for you.
Short answer, but yeah, it's been a long year, but it's been so much fun, and getting to know Springfield and Missouri State has been wonderful. I think there's one of the things I took this job for was the amount of potential that I think that we had. And I think we're about to start realizing that.
Yeah, so your predecessor was the one who kind of led the decision along with university administration in making the move from a great home in the Missouri Valley Conference to going to Conference USA and getting to go into the FBS level. And that wasn't an easy move, especially with the Valley being located inside of the state and everything. So somebody else and another group of people kind of make that decision. You come in to implement that decision. What has that been like for you?
Well, it's been an interesting time to do it, right? I mean, us in Delaware are doing this move at the same time, and I'm not sure anybody would have had it harder than we are going to have it, because now you got rev share, you got the NIL space, you got all this stuff. Even rev share didn't exist one year ago, when maybe some people like Jacksonville State or Sam Houston made the move. So to do it right now is certainly an interesting time to do it, to say the least. And so we're just taking it day by day, and we're trying to make the best moves possible. There's been a lot of things that we've needed to adjust at our football facility. Really, almost every other sport is going to be good to go in Conference USA. But certainly our football program needed some work, needed some touch-ups around the stadium. We've put about $11 million into Plaster Stadium before we kick off here on Saturday. So it's been a lot, but it's been great. And it's I really think it's just the beginning of some of the stuff that we need to do over the next 5 to 10 years.
Is that a daunting task because of how much needs to be done for you to do it the right way? Is it a fun task because you kind of have this palette of stuff where you can do things?
Yeah, I look at it more as a fun task, right? I mean, I think most people are realistic with your move to FBS, right? I mean, most teams, it takes a little while to get going. I think JMU kind of spoiled everybody. But it's so much fun. I mean, there's so much to do, and Springfield in general is just so hungry. And I'm sure the Bears who are in St. Louis are hungry to watch a winner and to feel that sense of pride. So that keeps us going every day, and it's been great so far.
All right, so anytime I look at somebody in athletic administration's resume and I see Central Florida on it, I say to myself, that's somebody who's probably pretty good at thinking outside the box, because Central Florida is known for being kind of an innovative university in the way they do things from an athletic standpoint. How much does the fact that you spent some time there and maybe you're shaped by some people there help you as you're trying to do all these things right now in Springfield?
I'm not sure I'd make a decision at any point in time without thinking back to kind of thinking in my head, all right, what we would have done at UCF. So when I was there, it was 2016 to 21, I believe. So it was the 2 years of Scott Frost, the 2 years or 3 years of Josh Heupel, and 1 year of Malzahn. And we had Johnny Dawkins as our basketball coach. We really had it rolling. Danny White was the AD, who's now at Tennessee. And we had actually several ADs on his administrative staff now, Scott Carr at FIU, Eric Wood was at La Tech for a little bit. I could go on, and so we had such a good staff, I'm not sure I could write a book on the whole 2017 season, with the win in the Peach Bowl versus Auburn, and our national championship.
Yeah, that's I'm sure that was a fun time. Was that being around that, declaring the national champions? What was obviously that caught a lot of attention.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, at the end of the day, when we made that, we started really talking about the possibilities in really early November of that year, And we needed a lot of things to play out in our favor, and they did. And we obviously we had to go take care of business on the field. You know, you beat a team who beat the national champions and the college football playoff, or I call it an invitational at that time, right? It wasn't really a playoff. You know, it was fun, and we had a lot of good moments during that moment in time, and you know, we even paid out the national championship bonuses to Scott Frost while he was at Nebraska.
Interesting. One game does not make a transition, but how gratifying was it that the football program was able to pick up their first FBS win on the road at Marshall this past Saturday and did so in a pretty dramatic fashion?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, the coaches, the team, I mean, everybody was just over the moon. And, you know, we left USC, obviously, out there in L.A. in the Coliseum, and I know the score didn't look good, but if you went back and actually looked at the tape, I left there thinking, like, we were in a lot of really, really good positions. They just had guys who were five-star athletes who ran 4.3 40s, and they kind of, you know, got away from us. So, you know, I felt like if we cleaned up some stuff, and the coaching staff did it, we just cleaned up some stuff. We were in some good positions. And then we did that when we played a more like opponent, as I'll say, right? When, you know, Marshall looks a heck of a lot more like us than we maybe look like USC. So, and so we went there, got the win, probably even left some points on the field. And so I think our confidence is so high right now. And obviously with an SMU team coming in here that, you know, preseason top 25, college football playoff team last year, and we get them in Springfield. It's just it's a really unique opportunity for us to play on national television. It was 1981 was the last time Plaster Stadium was on national television. So I think I tweeted out today, I think it was about 16,000 days since the last time we were on national television at home in Plaster Stadium.
Forgive my ignorance on this, but is there a story behind getting SMU to come into Springfield?
Well, that was done right before I got here, but I think it has a little bit to do with, I mean, when they made their move to the ACC, I think they had a couple of holes. We had, we were moving up, we had some holes. It was just one of those things that really, you know, kind of ironically worked out. And, you know, so we're reaping the benefits of that now. And in terms of our season ticket sales, which is at records, you know, hopefully, you know, we got a couple more tickets to sell, but we'll hopefully get a sellout this weekend, and it'll be quite the day in Springfield.
How do you, as an athletic director, make sure that while so much attention does need to go on football, especially with what you're going through right now, that at the same time that you continue to give the attention to the other sports that need that need you know, something from you as well?
It's a delicate balance, right? Because I mean, if you know us and you know our history with, you know, both of our basketball programs, you know, our basketball programs have been supported in this town for decades, and people are really, really passionate about basketball. So it's certainly by no means are we going to forget all of our other sports, even Joey in baseball, who can step into Conference USA and compete for championships. But I love what Coach Martin has put together, a St. Louis guy. We've got a true freshman point guard from St. Louis. He looks the part. I've watched this in practice. We don't even resemble remotely what we had last year. So I'm really excited about that program. And our Lady Bears, obviously a historic program, been to a Final Four, you know, the Jackie Stiles era, and we've been to several Sweet 16 since. You know, we are going to compete for a championship right away in Conference USA. So I'm really excited what Beth Cunningham's got on the floor this year. So I know we're very football centric at the moment, but we're going to try and be in everything school and make sure that we're good across the board.
There are still there are hurt feelings, I think, from some, maybe not Missouri State fans, but fans of Missouri Valley basketball. And obviously the Valley holds a huge spot here in St. Louis about some of these rivalries that don't exist anymore. And generally we see, you know, we saw it with Missouri and Kansas. They got back on the football field this past weekend. Sometimes it takes a little while, but is there a desire, especially from a basketball standpoint, to at some point maybe reignite some of these rivalries that have gone away because you're not in the Valley anymore?
100%. And I've already talked to a couple of ADs, and I know there's an appetite for it, especially with a few schools. So we certainly want to continue to play in the non-conference schools like Southern Illinois, Illinois State, Drake, UNI. I mean, these schools have gone down over the past couple of decades with some great moments, and we certainly want to continue that. So I know from our perspective, we certainly want to get back to scheduling some of those schools and some home and homes and get them on the field, because our fans recognize those brands and those mean something to us, and they mean something to the Valley, and the Valley means a lot to us. I know we may not be in that conference anymore, but that conference is a great conference, and it's still part of our history. So we certainly want to continue some of those.
I'll finish you off with this, and just as you look at the big picture and the long term picture, what's the ceiling for Missouri State Athletics? Is it where you're at right now, getting into Conference USA and then being an FBS team? Is it getting to a point where people look at Mizzou and Missouri State, you know, very, very similar? As you look at the very long-term idea here in the city of Springfield and what it can support in terms of the university, where do you see this thing going?
I see it's growing, and I'm not going to put a cap on it, but you know, these days and age, and with college athletics and all the movement that's happened just over the last few years, there's going to be more movement at some point once you get toward the end of some TV contracts and in 30, 31, 32, 33, something like that. And, you know, we're going to have to see how college athletics plays out. So, you know, right now, you know, there's a lot of states have multiple FBS institutions, and now Missouri's got two of them. So we're just excited about that. And at the end of the day, you can't really do anything unless you take care of business in the here and now. So, that's what we're going to focus on. Make sure that we, go out there, compete in Conference USA, win some championships, and, make us a desirable institution.
It's going to be a historic day coming up on Saturday. First home game for Missouri State as an FBS team, and they bring in a team that's been in the top 25 this year, SMU. That's going to be a 2:30 kickoff. Tickets still available, MissouriStateBears.com. Maybe worth the drive down to Springfield coming up on Saturday. Patrick, thank you so much for this time. I really do appreciate it, and hopefully we can check in with you every once in a while.
I would love to. Appreciate you having me on. And for all the Bears in St. Louis, come on down to Springfield.
All right, very good. That's Patrick Ransdell, athletics director at Missouri State University. And they've got it's been fun to watch what they've had going, for sure. And getting that win at Marshall this past weekend, first FBS win, and now hosting SMU this past weekend. Really good stuff going on in Springfield. Another break. We'll come back, and Kevin Ryans from Channel 2 and Channel 11 will join us. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We've got about 23 minutes left in the show, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. At 8 o'clock, Jen Cease is going to be in here with City Spotlight, so you'll definitely want to stay for that. Right now, happy to welcome onto the program. He's our very good friend. You see him on Channel 2 and Channel 11. He is Kevin Ryans. He's on Twitter, at OfficialKevRy. Kevin, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Matt, how's it going, man? So good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to be able to talk to you as well. We got a few things we want to talk about with you. We'll start with the Cardinals. They got themselves back to .500, then they went to Seattle, and they just really couldn't hit, especially yesterday, 2-for-22 with runners in scoring position. There's not a lot of time left in the season, 99% chance that this team is not a playoff team. What are you taking away from this club right now as they kind of play out the string and try to win as many games as possible?
You know, while it was a struggle over in Seattle earlier this week, you know, I actually feel pretty encouraged about the Cardinals and the way they played. They had the Giants, who were a postseason team, and they were able to beat them a couple of times over the weekend. I thought that was pretty encouraging, trying to play spoiler there. And you know what? I think the Cardinals have done everything that they needed to do this season. I know it's disappointing to watch if you're a fan that team has only 72 wins and, you know, most likely not making the postseason, though the Mets are trying to make it easier for some of the people below them to try to catch them and everything. But you've seen the development of a guy like Mason Lynn. You've seen the development of, Victor Scott. You see a guy like Michael McGreevy come up and pitch well. Matthew Liberatore is having a career year, struggled recently, but he's having a career year as well. I'm very encouraged, and, you know, I really do think that Ollie Marmol is right. You know, you're not seeing the quit that you might have seen in previous teams that had really high expectations. This team continues to play baseball. They give you a competitive game. I know the last few nights, not necessarily what you want to see as a Cardinal fan, but they give you a good game, competitive. And I think for the most part, that's what you want to see, continue to be young and hungry. And the Cardinals have shown that. So encouraged, though disappointed. This is St. Louis. It's a championship town, and you want to see that in the near future.
Any thoughts on whether or not Mason Wynn should actually be out there playing on that meniscus tear?
I think the Cardinals are doing the wrong thing by letting him continue to play. And I get it. Not a couple of weeks left. The surgery is already planned. Why not try to finish it strong? He's had a really nice year for St. Louis. He does it all defensively. We know he wants to play every day. You see the warrior mentality in him and going out there. I just feel sometimes you got to save a player from himself. And I just don't want to risk the potential of more injury. So I'm a little confused as to why they're continuing to let him rock. But, I definitely and commend the heart of Mason Wynn wanting to be out there with his team through it all.
It is always good when area college football teams are performing at a pretty high level, and we've got two of those right now. Obviously, Missouri coming off just a huge win against Kansas this past weekend. They're into the top 25 at 2-0. You've got Illinois that looks like a team that could get into the college football playoff. They're now ranked in the top 10. Sometimes football kind of catches us by surprise when we're in the throes of baseball season. But right now, for our two teams in the area that play at the highest level, they're performing at a pretty high level.
Yeah. And I loved Illinois' resolve going to a Power Four school in Duke and winning on the road. I think it's so important to build that kind of victory over there, a game that you should win. But still, going out there and simulating that early on in the season, that can only bode well for them as they go into what it will be a really tough Big Ten year. And for Missouri, I wasn't sure what they would get with all the people leaving and Brady Cook and guys like Luther Burden. And they've had to reconstruct a little bit of that offensive line as well. Defensively, they had guys out there already. I knew that defensively they'd be okay. But to stop all over Central Arkansas as much as they did, and then to show the resiliency, come back a few times against Kansas, who played them very well. I don't think we should snip at Kansas. I thought they played a really good game, and I thought they came to compete in a rivalry game. To be in that setting, to be able to go out there and compete well and win those games is very encouraging for the Tigers. I know they have Louisiana this week, but then sooner or later they're going to be in that tough SEC slate. So, very encouraged by what I've seen from Illinois and Missouri.
You're a Syracuse guy. What did you think of them running wind sprints? Fran Brown not happy after they got that win against UConn.
I saw Greg Olsen was saying that it was all for show or whatnot. I just totally disagree with that. I think Fran Brown means business. This is the guy, he says, winners get washed, right? So apparently he doesn't take showers after they lose. This is a guy that wants to win and knows that Syracuse should beat UConn. When I was over as a student over there at SU, they stomped all over UConn, and they weren't nearly as talented, didn't have as many talented recruits and did not have the expectations that this Syracuse team does. So I loved it. I loved it. And you know what? They able to grind it out a win, too. It's a good example to show, and you win the ball game, too.
Final thing for Kevin Ryan's a friend from Channel 2 and Channel 11. Blues prospect camp getting underway. They'll play a couple games. The prospects will against the Blackhawks and the Wild prospects coming up over the next few days. And then training camp is going to be underway. We're like 9 or 10 days from their first preseason game. It feels like of all the area professional sports, feels like the Blues are the ones right now that it's probably the reason to be most optimistic about. Or they are the team that you should be most optimistic about. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, how could you not be? They have the right coach in place. I know it took them a little bit to get to that point. It got some serendipity with Jim Montgomery getting let go over in Boston, but the great coach, and then a young team that was able to find itself late in the season and battle the way they did into the postseason, and they were seconds away from moving on to the second round. How could you not be encouraged and excited for what's to come here with the St. Louis Blues?
Yeah, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Kevin Ryans, he is a sports reporter, KTVI Fox 2, Channel 11 as well. You follow him on Twitter at Official Kev Rye. Kevin, always appreciate the time. Hopefully I'll see you real soon.
Yeah, I hope so too, man. It's always great seeing you out in the event, so I'm looking forward to it.
All right, very good. That's Kevin Ryans joining us. We appreciate him taking a few moments with us. One more break. We'll come back, and we'll get you ready for tonight's City Spotlight. Jen Cease is going to be with us. That's next right here on KMOX.
Now, back to the Strike Zone, presented by Graybar on the voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Starting to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line, we will not have a show tomorrow night. That's because the Cardinals are going to be back in action. What's on Deck is presented by Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the sign you have the very best. Cardinals-Brewers three-game series beginning tomorrow. Cardinals are going to be sending Andre Pallante tomorrow, then Sonny Gray and Miles Michaelis, Quinn Priester, Brandon Woodruff, Jacob Mizorowski, the three that are going to go for the Brewers. When we get done here in just a few minutes, it's going to be a City Spotlight hosted by Jen Cease. We'll get a preview right now. Hi, Jen.
Hi there. On the stream, I'm Kevin Wheeler.
Okay, that's good.
He sits really low in this chair. Does
he have short legs? Would that be why?
I don't
why?
Know, but I sat down. Okay. I was like, whoa. There's extra space to
all right.
go.
Okay, I always have my chair high up, and I think it's because
really?
Of my light.
You don't say. Remember the photo I
yes,
took when I had
know.
To take over your desk?
Yeah.
Your standing desk?
And I
desk?
Love that photo. When I sent out a tweet about you hosting Sports Open Line, I used
Every
that
time,
photo.
Anytime
I use a photo of somebody else, I'm like, I try to look at it in the most, like, is there any, I've learned this from my wife, because I know my wife. My wife is beautiful, most beautiful woman
I've
in the
met
world.
I've met her, she is.
Yes. So, but I know there's some photos she just probably doesn't want out there of
right.
her. So I have
my daughter is particular as well.
Through marriage, I have learned if you are going to post a picture of somebody, make sure it is a photo that they would be okay with being posted. So I remember that day, like I was a total stalker. I was like on your Facebook, I was on your Twitter, I was looking through photos. I was like, what's the photo that Jen would be okay with me using?
Well, I did put it out there publicly,
you
so
did.
It's fair game,
yes.
right?
Okay, I guess so. All right, so here's the question.
You should have prepped me before you did this.
City plays three quarters of the game a man up.
That's right.
I believe their shot total was the second highest shot total in the history of Major League Soccer.
It was like 41 on the night, I think, or 42.
Their expected goal in that situation, depending on what metric you're looking at, somewhere between 3.5 and 5.
Yes.
How did they not... How'd they score one goal? How'd they not win? How'd they tie? Like, how?
Yeah,
how?
Their shots on goal were like 14 or 15. So you look at those quality shots on goal are quality shots, right? So you look statistically, another goal should go on. The number of times our analyst, Dale Shilley, who we'll talk to today, you know, was like, oh, because it's going to happen. I can't even tell you on every highlight that we had. Because statistically, you feel the build. One should fall.
Yeah.
I give a lot of credit the fill-in goalkeeper who came in with no warm-up, coming in having to do in 75% of the game. He was pretty nails. I'll give him that.
It's just, and I'm not trying to beat up on City. I'm really not.
I mean, in any other scenario, at least one more goal falls.
Yeah.
I think.
And I to what you just said, sometimes you watch games, it doesn't matter what the sport, and all of a sudden, a big basket, a big hit, a big goal, whatever, and you have like this, okay, we felt this coming.
Yes.
So, what a letdown when you feel it coming and it never actually shows up.
Yeah, it's a tie, right, that feels like a loss. That is not a tie that feels like a win or a tie. It feels like a loss. It should have been in City's hands. They were doing so well up until that point. And then Dallas is a team that likes to pack it in the box, so they did so even more. Sometimes I will tell you from just experience in playing, either playing a man down or playing against a team that is a man down, you think it's going to be easier than it is, but they become so defensive and so hard to break that they then just look for the break, and that's what they did.
What was your thought when when they go down a man that early at that moment, oh, what were you thinking?
Well, we got this. One, we got this. Two, it's a goalkeeper. So I'm hoping that we can catch that goalkeeper cold. Didn't know he was going to be as heroic as he was in many of the cases. I mean, again, kudos to him. But thought, for sure, we're going to open this game up. It's going to be several goals. Maybe City can actually have a clean sheet as well, which we haven't had in very many games. And it did not go that way.
I've asked this question to a few people lately, and again, I'm really not trying to be a jerk in the way that I say this, but we've seen a lot of really close games. So when any sport you play a close game, you start doing the post-mortem of what are the small things that happened in the game that could have pushed this in the other direction. So when you're losing 3-2, three straight games, where are the moments? So you're always able to come out of that and say, well, you know what? It actually wasn't that far away from being 3-2 in the other direction or something like that. That is the narrative coming game after game after game. Are we at a point where it's just like, this is just kind of who they are? And yeah, you can look at every game and say, okay, there were some things that if they would have gone different, it could have gone different, but we're past the point of expecting those things to go different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, having, what, 5 games left of the season, I would say, yeah, if they don't take Montreal and punish Montreal for already being eliminated, making the case that, hey, we are down there, but we are not Montreal right now, I think you do kind of set the tone maybe for the next few games because their schedule doesn't get any easier. And then you look then to the season, the postseason, and after that to hopefully start anew next year.
And they can be officially eliminated this weekend,
that's right,
can't they?
All yeah, right. I believe so.
I mean, that's going to happen. It's not, you know, that's...
We're still 2 points ahead of LA Galaxy because we both got ties, but yeah, it's right there.
Yeah. Well, what do you have coming up on the show tonight?
Yeah, so Dale Schilly will join us. We got some audio from David Critchley talking today. I'd like to hear Critch's thoughts. We'll get Matt Rocchio on the show. Okay. He's going to fill in for me this weekend. I'm going to Dallas, so I won't be on the City game. Matt Rocchio from STL Sports Central is going to be on, do his thoughts, and then an interview with Celio Pompeu.
Okay, very good. Well, I'll be listening. That gets started here in just a few minutes after the 8 o'clock news. Thank you, Jen. So again, we will have no sports open line tomorrow night because we're going to get right into Cardinals baseball. It's going to be a 7:15 first pitch at, or 7:10 first pitch, I believe, in Milwaukee. So 6:15 for our pregame coverage. Kevin Wheeler and I will have you for Redbird Rush Hour. That's going to be during the 5 o'clock hour coming up tomorrow. Thanks so much to all. What a fun show tonight. We got a lot in here. It's been a very, very busy last couple hours. So certainly appreciate everybody that was with us tonight. If you ever want to relive, rehear anything that we do, you can always find the Sports Open Line podcast. That's available at camox.com, also available on the Odyssey app. Don't go anywhere. Jen Cease has you for Soccer Spot or City Spotlight. That's up next right here on KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.